James Joyce is an Irish cultural and commercial phenomenon.
He's the nearest thing we have to a literary leprechaun.
But it was the social and artistic freedoms he found in Europe that shaped his work.
And he bowed his head and bowed his will.
Many of the raw materials for Ulysses Joyce found not so much in the streets of Dublin, but in Trieste.
James Joyce's self-proclaimed European exile in Paris, Zurich, Trieste. Joyce Lorpian, with me, Professor Andrew Hussey, on BBC Sounds and Radio 4 this Saturday evening at 8 o'clock.
And our Modernism series continues with Mrs. Dalloway by Virginia Woolf. That's our book at bedtime at 10:45. Leonard offers some sound advice in The Archers at 7, but now on Radio 4 it's time to join David Mitchell and the panel as they attempt to unearth more truths amongst the lies.
We present The Unbelievable Truth, the panel game built on truth and lies. In the chair, please welcome David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. The Buddha stated there are three things that cannot be hidden: the truth, the moon, and the sun. Clearly, he'd never been to Scotland. Please welcome Alan Davis, Lucy Porter, Justin Edwards, and Lou Sanders. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths, which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth, or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Justin Edwards. Justin, your subject is Jackie Chan, the internationally renowned Hong Kong film star and martial artist known for his acrobatic fighting style and innovative stunts. Off you go, Justin. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
Born in 1956, Jackie Chan was nicknamed Tantiao Luti by his parents, meaning bouncing staircase, for his habit of rolling headfirst down the stairs of their family home without apparent injury.
Lou.
Was he born in 1956? Tell me straight.
No, he was born in 1954.
Ooh. That is very trickster behaviour.
Yeah. Lucy?
I mean, since we're here, did he have a nickname of because he kept falling down the stairs and bouncing?
No, he didn't.
No.
I mean, you've barely a sentence in, Justin. It's carnage for the panel. No, he wasn't called Bouncing Staircase. His nickname was Pow Pow, meaning cannonball, because the energetic child was always rolling around.
Ah.
This string of childhood stunts shaped Jackie's future as he swore never to fall over again and followed his father into the safety of the bakery business. But stunt fights and violence were never far from his mind, and by 2004, the Chan Bakery of Tokyo was famed for its trademark Taekwon sourdough, Nin Jam donuts, and Thai cheesecake. Then one day, as Jackie was delivering a tray of French fancies to the Tokyo headquarters of Warner Brothers, he slipped on a lychee, cartwheeled off a balcony and fell three floors, bouncing off a passing rickshaw to land in a garbage truck. The Warner's executive who witnessed this immediately decided to get their cakes and pastries elsewhere. But Jackie had been bitten by the movie bug, and a new career began to blossom. So far, he has appeared in over 300 films, but despite their violent content, does not wish to promote bad behaviour.
Alan.
I believe he's appeared in that many films.
He hasn't. Huh. According to IMDb, he's appeared in 141 films. Huh. He apparently claims to have appeared in 250, but not more than 300.
He had so many bangs on the head, yeah. He really can't remember.
Yeah, it's just, it feels like loads to him.
He asked for all swearing to be removed from Rush Hour. I am a role model for many young children, he said, before throwing himself through a plate glass window onto a speeding motorbike and breaking a triad's legs.
Lou.
I do think he maybe asked for the swearing to be removed.
That's absolutely right. He did.
Jackie has recently admitted that he does use stuntmen, but only for driving sensibly and observing the speed limit, or walking normally down a road without jumping on or off things.
Alan.
Does he use stuntmen?
Well.
Yeah.
Well.
We can't have a grey area here.
I know, but yet you seem to have found one. I'm going to give you the point, because, yes, he does use stuntmen. He revealed that though he never uses stunt doubles for fight scenes, he does use them for non-action scenes, such as when his character is just walking down the street or driving a car normally. Basically, he's the stuntman. That's what that means. He is a stuntman.
He just gets regular actors.
Yeah, exactly. Get someone like, you know, Ralph Fiennes to sort of do the other bits, you know.
And Ralph Fiennes' walking is excellent.
Yeah, exactly. It's so moving.
Jackie has some unusual superstitions. He wears a life jacket at all times on aeroplanes. He won't call a telephone number that ends in a 9, and he won't buy a Chinese television in case it explodes.
Lou.
One of them, yeah. I think it's the Chinese television. OK. Is it?
Going for that?
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah!
Yes, in 2009, Chan faced a backlash in China following a remark he made to Chinese business leaders about the perceived quality of Chinese-made goods. He said, "If I need to buy a television, I would definitely buy a Japanese television. A Chinese television might explode." He was applauded by many in the audience.
Jackie has always wanted a pet dog, but suffers from a terrible allergy that leaves him breathless and covered in a rash when even in the same room as one. Undeterred, he has instead a large collection of koi carp. He has built coral baskets for them to sleep in and takes them for underwater walkies in his swimming pool using a waterproof lead, and he's taught them to roll over on command and die for the emperor.
Lucy.
I mean, allergic to dogs, keeps koi carp. I mean, he's taught his koi carp to roll over.
You're absolutely right. yes, Jackie Chan is able to make a koi carp roll over on command and allow him to rub its belly. You can watch him doing this in a YouTube video entitled Jackie Chan Trains a Fish. So after this, it's either that or The Archers.
See, that's why he thinks he's made 250 films. Yeah. Because he includes ones like that that nobody wants to watch.
Yes, that, I'm not sure if that's in the IMDb. You know. Yeah. Are you including Jackie Chan Trains a Fish? Some of my finest work. Particularly the bit where I just walk along to the fish, which is actually played by Ralph Fiennes.
Jackie has used his fame to branch out into many other areas. He has built a Jackie Chan-themed campsite, written 8 autobiographies, and opened a string of Jackie Chan bowling alleys with his face painted onto the balls, along with the slogan, "Put your fingers in my nose and roll me to victory."
Lou?
Yeah, all of them.
Is that you're going for all true?
Yeah. No, the campsite. Oh, there's this campsite. Or I do honestly think bowling. Bowling.
Not true. Sorry.
Was the campsite bit?
Do you want to buzz?
No.
We're not chatting here.
Oh, I've got nothing to lose. I'm going to lose anyway. So yeah, campsite.
Not true.
Do the 8 autobiographies. Do that as well.
Yeah, autobiographies.
Not true. Yes. He's published only 2 autobiographies.
Lazy.
I Am Jackie Chan and Never Grow Up.
He's also planning a musical of his life, I Am Jackie Chan. The imaginatively entitled show will see reworkings of classic hits to reflect his stunt work. Songs include Purple Sprain, Ouch, I Did It Again, Never Gonna Get Back Up, Blue Suede Bruise, Footloose, and Another Brick in the Balls.
Lou.
The musical, he's planning a musical of his life. Yes, he is, come on.
He is planning a musical of his life. And that's the end of Justin's lecture. And at the end of that round, Justin, you've smuggled no truths past the rest of the panel, which means you've scored no points. We turn now to Lou Sanders. Lou, your subject is blood, the red liquid that circulates in humans and other vertebrate animals. Off you go, Lou.
Blood. My blood type is O. Well, the full name is, oh my goodness, what a cutie. some rouge makeup has got real pig's blood in it. So telling someone you look like a pig today is actually a compliment. Thank you, Alan.
Alan. Is that true about the makeup with the blood in?
Pig's blood in it. No.
Oh.
No.
Got you.
In the early 20th century, beetroot juice was applied to the face to create a rouge to give colour to the cheeks. Before that, a ground-up red volcanic material called cinnabar was used in rouge. However, cinnabar is an oxide of mercury, which is extremely toxic, and its use caused a number of early deaths.
Yeah.
Woo! Early deaths.
Yeah. Woo! Death by burning holes in the face.
Yeah. Are you playing the early deaths drinking game? We have a shot every time someone mentions early deaths.
If you're losing blood rapidly and you want it to stop, start singing to your blood. The sound of song calms it down and reduces the flow.
Lucy.
I wonder, because singing would slow your heart rate, someone has at some point done an experiment to show that it slows blood flow.
No.
No, okay.
No, they haven't done that. It doesn't affect blood flow. Okay. You should, in fact, if someone's bleeding heavily, don't waste time singing. You need to do something a lot more active. You know?
Well, no, showcase your talents.
Shut through the heart.
Diamond's nickname is Blood Diamond because she got in a scrap with Keith Duffy where she drew blood. And if you don't believe that, well, let me tell you that Madonna once commissioned a portrait of her and Guy Ritchie in her own blood.
Justin.
I think that Madonna might have commissioned a portrait of herself in her own blood.
She does seem weird.
She does. It's the kind of thing she'd do.
But she didn't do that. Ooh. She hasn't done that.
Well, I'm checking you left, right and centre.
Yeah,
here.
That's a good plausible Madonna weirdness.
Yeah. I love Madonna. Okay, she got the idea from Saddam Hussein, who had a copy of the Quran written in his own blood.
Lucy.
I mean, whatever we can believe of Madonna, I think Saddam Hussein we can believe double.
Yeah, he's another eccentric.
Didn't look as good in a basque, but yeah, maybe he had a copy of the Quran in his own blood, maybe?
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
For a period of 2 years in the late 1990s, Saddam Hussein sat with a nurse and an Islamic calligrapher, having a total of 27 litres of his own blood withdrawn and used to transcribe the Quran. The text is currently locked away behind 3 vaulted doors under a mosque in Baghdad. Muslim leaders aren't sure what to do with it. As to write the Quran in blood is forbidden, but it's also considered illegal by many to destroy the holy book. It's in a weird sort of limbo.
You get a lot of biscuits for 27 litres of blood.
There's a wine at Bella Pasta, which is said to taste of blood and costs nearly £200 a bottle. Actually, house red is an expression used in hospitals for blood. The expression for urine is house white, and I'm not even going to mention penis colada.
Justin.
I would like it if house red was the medical term for blood in hospital.
It is! Oh. Yeah. Yes, blood is frequently referred to in hospitals as house red, particularly in reference to the bags of blood supplied for transfusions.
In ancient Egypt, blood was an aphrodisiac, and butchers at the time wore high heels to keep blood off their feet. Well, nobody wants randy feet. Scientists...
Alan.
I believe that they would wear some sort of high shoes.
No, this is going really badly.
As you may infer from Lou's remark, that is true. Yes. Butchers in ancient Egypt wore high heels to enable them to walk safely over the blood of dead animals without slipping. High heels in ancient Egypt were otherwise only worn by the upper classes and for ceremonial purposes. That and for butchery.
That's the only time I wear them.
Scientists have discovered that most tropical fish could survive in a tank filled with human blood. It started as a prank and it turned into a medical thesis. Things that raise your blood pressure by more than 5% are being blonde, having a younger sibling, or being driven in a car by me.
Justin.
I think having a younger sibling would raise your blood pressure.
You're absolutely right. According to a study involving 200 families, those with younger brothers had higher total cholesterol levels and blood pressure up to 6% higher than others in the study. Thank you, Lou. And at the end of that round, Lou, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is that most tropical fish could survive in a tank filled with human blood.
I should have done.
Yeah, tropical fish require less oxygen than cold water fish, just 2.66 millilitres of oxygen per litre. Fully oxygenated human blood contains 200 millilitres of oxygen per litre, which is enough oxygen for the fish to survive.
So they could swim around inside you, theoretically.
They'd have to be quite small.
Yeah.
They could happily swim around, I imagine, in the blood system of a blue whale, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Huge, great corridors there, arteries and veins will be, where the very happy time for the tropical fish. That's probably where the expression a whale of a time comes from. And that means, Lou, that you've scored 1 point. There are 60,000 miles of blood vessels in the human body, and if all your blood vessels were laid out in a line, you'd be dead. The Bloody Mary has been scientifically proven to be the best alcoholic drink to enjoy on an aeroplane. On British Airways, it's very much the drink of choice for the pilots. Next up is Lucy Porter. Lucy is married to fellow panellist Justin Edwards and says she can tell if he's lying just by looking into his eyes, though she does need to fetch a footstool first. Lucy, your subject is marsupials, mammals common to Australia whose young are typically carried in a pouch on their mother's stomach. Off you go, Lucy.
Marsupials have long been associated with power and diplomacy. Napoleon bought his wife Josephine a wombat to make up for not wanting to have it off with her. Peter the Great of Russia took a possum as a mistress. And US President Barack Obama was once presented with a 6-foot buck kangaroo by Australian Prime Minister John Howard, who told Obama, "If you can get my wallet back out of that bastard's pouch, you can keep the money yourself, mate."
Justin.
Did Napoleon give a wombat to...
To Josephine.
To Josephine, that's what I'm...
Yeah. Yes, he did.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
So nice to hear of a husband giving his wife a thoughtful gift, isn't it?
But wasn't it because he wouldn't sleep with her?
Well, yeah.
And then he later divorced her and married a Habsburg.
Is this what you want?
I just want a wombat. Kangaroos do not technically jump. They actually remain perfectly still and push the earth further away from them with their feet. Kangaroos can be easily identified by their brightly coloured antlers, the fact they have 2 heads, 4 lungs, 3 stomachs and are left-handed, which is why you never see them using a pair of scissors.
Lou.
Ah. Now.
Don't rush.
Okay, 3 stomachs and left-handed.
You're going for both?
Yeah.
3 stomachs and left-handed.
In a plot twist.
Ah, you see, that's confusing. I think the situation is you break even.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Haven't got 3 stomachs and they are left-handed.
Right, okay, fine.
So all of this was totally futile. A study by St. Petersburg State University found that 95% of kangaroos are left-handed. Kangaroos are only the second species after humans to be observed to have a hand preference.
Opossums are the Irish cousins of the possum. Opossums are identical to possums in every way, save for their bright red hair and ability to win Eurovision. Kangaroos prefer to think of themselves as lovers rather than fighters and can often be found kissing. Official advice from the Australian government states that if you are attacked by a kangaroo, just relax into it, close your eyes and if possible slip in a bit of tongue. Koalas, on the other hand, are mean, heartless animals. There is no collective noun for a group of koalas, for if more than 2 are ever gathered together, there can only be carnage.
Lou.
I think there's no collective noun for them.
You're absolutely right.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the collective noun for a group of kangaroos is a mob. There's no collective noun for koalas as they're mostly solitary creatures, rarely interacting in large numbers.
Like you, isn't it?
Not until my clones get out.
Koalas have all got chlamydia as well. Found that out the hard way.
Yeah. didn't know that. I find that out a good way from a Radio 4 recording rather than, as you implied, sex with a koala.
No, it's just a bit of fun.
Koalas are one of the 10 most deadly things in Australia, coming seventh in the charts between wolf spider bites and overdosing on Tim Tams.
Lou.
Are they the seventh most dangerous creature in Australia? Probably not.
No.
Fine.
No, think about it.
No, yeah. There's all the... That's more your style.
No, they're not, though.
No, cool, yeah. No.
Lucy.
In 1924, Police Sergeant Hector Proctor was the first man to have kangaroo skin successfully grafted onto his testicles. In 1907, dancer Victor Gourlay had one of his Achilles tendons replaced with the wallabies, and in 2018, Piers Morgan had his mouth replaced with a wombat's anus.
Justin.
I think the first one's true, the man with the kangaroo...
Kangaroo testicles.
Kangaroo testicles.
Sergeant Hector Proctor.
Yes, that sounds very, very likely to me.
I love how easily I can deceive you.
Yes, I'm afraid it's not true. And that's the end of Lucy's lecture. And at the end of that round, Lucy, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that kangaroos can often be found kissing. They often kiss and hug one another, behaviour that has also been recorded amongst polar bears.
Oh,
that's nice.
Well, polar bears kissing kangaroo. Yeah.
They love each other.
That's a long journey.
It's been ages, they always say. And the second truth is that in 1907, dancer Victor Gourlay had one of his Achilles tendons replaced with a wallaby's. And that means, Lucy, you've scored 2 points. Female kangaroos practice diapause, the ability to pause their pregnancies. They do this in times of drought or famine, or just to hold out until they move into a better school catchment area. Kangaroos can reach speeds of up to 40 miles an hour, depending on the size of the truck that hits them. It's now the turn of Alan Davis. Alan provides the voiceover for Channel 5's The Dog Rescuers. He has also recently released an autobiography. The book has been described as impossible to put down. Less so the rescued dogs. Your subject, Alan, is beds. Items of furniture principally used for sleeping on, which commonly consist of a rectangular frame and mattress. Off you go, Alan.
For nearly 100 years, the UK capital of bed-making was Bedford. In the late 19th century, the town was making as many as 50,000 beds a day. However, the 1970s saw the invention of the duvet, and today virtually no one in Bedford bothers to make their beds at all. Hans Christian Andersen was terrified of being buried alive, so he always left a note on his bedside table saying, "I only seem to be dead."
Justin.
I think Hans Christian Andersen was terrified of being buried alive.
He was, and well, indeed.
Well, anyone is, really. It doesn't have to be Hans Christian Andersen. I don't know anyone that would welcome it.
Yes, but he obviously thought it was likely to happen because he also left a note on his bedside saying, "I only seem to be dead."
What happened when he died?
Well, I don't know, presumably,
do
you know,
to turn it over.
They sort of said, "We've given it 10 years now, and he's smelling."
Graham Butterfield, the official bed tester for the manufacturer's Silent Night, has a bottom so sensitive that his buttocks are insured for £1 million. A Chinese inventor developed an earthquake-proof bed designed to protect the sleeper by automatically dropping them into a sealed metal box when the mechanism detected earth tremors. When it failed to catch on with the public, it was remarketed as the instant coffin.
Justin.
I believe the first part of that could be true, that you could have had an earthquake-proof bed.
Yeah, now Justin said it, I do as well.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, Justin. Oh. Yes.
You wouldn't have sold one of those to Hans Christian Andersen, would you?
The inventor Laszlo Biro had a cousin called Joseph Lilo, who invented the inflatable mattress. In 2008, IKEA produced a children's bed they called the Grimhel, after the second in command of the Valkyries. Woolworths tried to follow suit and marketed a children's bed they called the Lolita, but had to remove it from sale after an outcry from parents.
Lou.
I think The IKEA bed.
The Grim Hell.
Yeah, because it's often in foreign names, isn't it?
Yeah, they often use foreign names. Not the Grim Hell, though, unfortunately. Though IKEA have sold a desk light called MILF. Marshmallow sweets called Godis Scum. A children's workbench called Fartful. And a shower curtain called Femin Vag. But not a Grim Hell.
Well, I don't feel silly now, at least.
Yes, yeah. Lucy.
What about Lolita? Let's try that one.
Yeah, you're right with Lolita. Yes. In 2008, Woolworths, which I think went out of business later that year, if I remember rightly, were forced to remove their children's bed, the Lolita Midsleeper Combi, from shelves after an outcry from parents appalled at the connection to Vladimir Nabokov's 1955 novel about a stepfather's sexual obsession with a 12-year-old girl. A spokesman for Woolworths said, "What seems to have happened is the staff who run the website had never heard of Lolita, and to be honest, no one else here had either." We had to look it up on Wikipedia. As I say, they went out of business later that year. A few years prior to that, BHS were forced to withdraw their Little Miss Naughty range of padded bras and knickers for preteens. God. And in 2002, Abercrombie & Fitch withdrew a line of children's thongs featuring slogans such as wink, wink and eye candy.
During the freezing winter of 2010, a Holiday Inn in Manchester tried using human bed warmers to heat guests' beds instead of traditional hot water bottles. "The problem is they do sometimes leak," said a hotel spokesman. "So we've decided to use hot water bottles after all." The adventurer Bear Grylls always travels with what he calls his pocket mattress. It's a thin sheet of waterproof fabric woven by women of the Navajo Nation. And when he's broadcasting from the wilds, no matter how remote or rugged the location may be, he lays it out every night on his hotel bed.
Thank you, Alan. And at the end of that round, Alan, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that Graham Butterfield, the official bed tester for the manufacturer's Silent Night, has a bottom so sensitive that his buttocks are insured for £1 million. And the second truth is that during the winter of 2010, a Holiday Inn in Manchester tried using human bed warmers to heat guests' beds. An employee would put on a special toasting suit designed to maximise their heating efficiency and then hop into a guest's bed for 5 minutes before the guests did. The complimentary service was trialled in Manchester, Kensington and Kingston branches and was available between 9 p.m. and 11 p.m. What a weird idea. And that means, Alan, that you've scored 2 points. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with minus 5 points, we have Lou Sanders. In third place, with 1 point, it's Alan Davis. And in joint first place, with an unassailable 4 points each, it's this week's winners, Lucy Porter and Justin Edwards. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair.